This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to BFM. It is Wednesday, the 28th of June, and I'm, of course, Koo Soo Chuang, joined by Mr. Tan Chung Han, the effervescent and learned erstwhile colleague.
Really?
How are you, mate, this morning?
That was like the nicest thing someone has said to me so far today.
I'm a really good liar, by the way.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Hey, so let's start off with the weather. And if you've been out and about at 6 o'clock this morning, which I'm sure you're not, you'll have discovered that it's wet and still warm, which is obviously quite typical of tropical weather. But according to my weather report, it's going to get cooler during the, well, not cooler, warmer during the rest of the day. Mm. And it's going to be, I think, raining in the afternoon, which is actually quite unusual for this time of year, isn't it? Because it's actually quite dry season.
You know, I'm trying to recall my geography lessons from school about when the monsoon...
It's all been thrown off by climate change.
Pretty much. I mean, it's been raining, you know, quite a bit. I think that we had a big storm like a couple of days ago, I think.
Yeah, right, so, it couldn't stop raining for like hours and hours. So I think at about... it's going to be quite cloudy till about 10, 11, 12 o'clock, and then it's going to get to thunderstorms and then back to cloudy again. But that's, of course, the prognosis. And the weather reports hardly ever stay to script, do they?
I was going to say, yeah. You know, like, yeah, you have that weather report, you know, with a, I don't know, like, I'm just trying to pick some arbitrary number, you know, 30% margin of error or something. I don't know.
Yeah, anyway, so pregnant silence, the weather forecast is concerned. Headlines, Han, what's happened overnight, of course, is many, many things, but we've selected three. There's been a cyber attack that spread across the Ukraine and said to be a kind of like a ransomware one. You would be seeing lots of those in the last few years. It's been a huge one. It's crippled firms, airports, banks, and government departments. And apparently, according to the news, the Telegraph is telling us that the hack may have spread to Britain.
Mm. So that's, well, apparently like, this one is spreading from Europe to the US as well. And so according to this list of companies whose operations have apparently been disabled, it includes Rosneft, the advertiser, WPP, and how about this? The Chernobyl nuclear facility.
Really?
How about this? So that's according to my notes here. So yeah, you're right. It started in the Ukraine. No, over 80 companies in Russia and Ukraine were initially affected. This virus, although it's similar to WannaCry, it goes by an interesting name. We're trying to ascertain the correct pronunciation for this virus, but it's P-E-T-Y-A.
Petya? It's a Russian kind of like, sounds like a...
It sounds all like Russian to me.
Like a female Russian spy with, you know, leggings up to here and, you know, whatever. But
that black widow,
that's right. A couple more items. Very quickly, there's been a tanker explosion in Pakistan, I think. It's been a fuel tanker. It was on a highway, I think, near Ahmedpur East. It's killed a lot of people, 150 people near the Pakistani city. And it was actually leaking fuel from this tanker. Quite horrific and quite a disaster. Our hearts, of course, go out to the people of Pakistan.
Yeah, you know, so this happened about a couple of days ago. According to media reports, at least 153 people killed. Yeah, you know, and like you mentioned, so initially this tanker was rushed to collect leaking fuel. The 153 people were killed when they rushed to collect the leaking fuel from the crash tanker.
To collect the leaking fuel?
Yeah,
because it's obviously, you know.
Right, you know, and then it suddenly exploded, hence the, the very, very high, mortality rate there. Yeah. Certainly a very, very tragic turn of events there.
Well, clearly quite tragic, and our deepest commiserations to the people of Pakistan. Let's end with some positive news, and it's the fact that the Australian model and actor, I think, Miranda Kerr, she's actually not unattractive from the pictures I see. She's actually followed Leonardo DiCaprio's cue and returned assets that were ill-gotten through the 1MBB largesse that the rest of the world finds quite unreal and illegal, clearly, but for us in Malaysia, which is the nucleus of the crime. Anyway, she's returned about $8 million worth of jewellery, and you know, obviously that money's come from 1MBB and it's following from Leo DiCaprio's example.
And so apparently the jewellery were allegedly bought by Joe Lowe, right? Well, at least according to the DOJ.
For her.
Yeah, which
so
makes...
So what is he thinking? What, he went trying to dump out her or what?
Well, that's what I was thinking, right? Because if, let's say, you're Joe Lowe and knowing that you bought, you know, you spent millions on this jewellery only for her to keep it in a safe somewhere. It's like,
but that's what he's got to do. I mean, he's obviously not oil painting, so he's got to resort to other... alternatives. Okay, let's call a halt to it for now. Next up, of course, Van Morrison, Brown Eyed Girl, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning, 6.08 a.m., 28th of June, Wednesday. Han, we've come back into the middle of the working week, right in the middle of the week on Wednesday. Fantastic. I love short weeks, by the way.
Oh, that's funny, yeah.
Yeah, no, who doesn't like short weeks,
right? We're that much closer to the weekend already.
Correct. That was Brown Eyed Girl by Van Morrison. To the rest of his peers, Sir George Ivan Morrison, the Northern Irish singer-songwriter, that seminal tune of the 70s, or was it 60s, 1967. So that was a signature song, by the way.
Yeah, you know, and just before we played that song, we were talking about Miranda Kerr. And
that's right.
I'm not sure if she has brown eyes, you know, but...
She's got these deep, luscious, gorgeous pools of eyes that were...
Does she not?
Does she not have blue eyes?
I don't know what the color of her eyes are, but if they were brown, I'm sure that's song would have been on the catalog or of any potential suitor. Although we understand that she is now married to someone.
Someone equally beautiful and gorgeous.
Yeah, I guess just goes to show you how up to date we are with the pop culture and
Miranda Kerr.
Celebrity weddings and whatnot.
Yeah, so anyway, so that was that. Let's move on to this BBC Culture story.
Sorry, real quick, Evan Spiegel.
Evan Spiegel. Yeah. He's the Snapchat guy, right?
Yeah, that's right. No? So that's the husband of, or Mr. Kerr right now, I guess.
Mr. Kerr, yeah. The other half. This item from BBC actually is selected by one of our producers, The Joy of Hate Watching. Now, apparently, according to the story from the BBC, a lot of people tune in religiously to, you know, TV series and TV dramas and in the age of Netflix and what have you, celestial movies, and we tune in religiously so that we can nitpick at some of these dramas because that's what we like now. Is that true, Han? I mean, do you binge watch movies and dramas?
Well, I used to, you know, obviously now with our work commitments, you know, that's a luxury or an indulgence that I don't typically, you know, get involved in anymore. But nevertheless, I can see the rationale for it because, you know, I would think that, well, according to this article, it says that hate watching is not the same thing as reveling in a guilty pleasure. It's a different beast. What I take, you know, from hate watching, it says that, you know, it could give you, say, a heightened sense of, you know, ego or superiority, right? Because you're thinking, oh, I have the power to criticize what I'm watching right now, so I must be better than, you know, what's on offer. I mean, I don't know. I know that's a bit of a stretch. What do you think, you know, hate watching?
The last TV series I watched religiously was Breaking Bad, which kind of shows you my age, right? But I think the reason why this is happening is because of social media. Mm. Every single thing now can be shared and disseminated and displayed, and your comments are so easily put online that obviously everybody becomes a couch critic and analyst, whether or not you're any good. And those that are any good, who are quite good at social media, whether Instagram or Facebook, they become stars and they get, I don't know, a lot of people are now famous on social media that they were never, they could never have been famous in the past.
Right, that's right. You know, and I guess there's a term for them, you know, for example, social media influencers, although social media...
That's right. Yes, it's really weird.
And it's apparently like a new career path, you know, and it's apparently sought after by, you know, advertising and marketing agencies like to try and latch onto the kind of eyeballs that follow their every tweet and their every post on Instagram and Facebook and whatnot, right? So, I mean, you have that breed of social media or netizens, rather. But again, you know, I wonder if going back to this idea of hate watching, you know, whether it's really the same thing here. You know, because again, you know, I think hate watching is, you know, being able to sit down in front of, you know, yeah, a TV show like you mentioned, Breaking Bad, or a movie, or maybe even a song, and just being this purely negative about it. Though, I mean, is that productive? I don't know what people get out of it, really.
Everybody reckons they're like, you know, TV analysts now, right? But, you know, in social media, you got people like Dan Bilzerian. I don't know whether you follow this guy, Dan Bilzerian. He's like the king of Instagram. He's got like 26 million followers. you know, he would be a loser otherwise in the real world, but in the world of social media, he's become like this cult hero. He's only about like 35 years old.
Oh.
And he's been famous because he's got these parties with, you know, well, females with no clothes on. And you know, and there's guns, in the swimming pools, and there's music. It's quite uncanny. So people like Rolling Stone pay him, or Hard Rock Cafe, they pay him like literally millions of dollars each time, twice a year, to hold parties in his mansion. It's quite uncanny,
right? You know, but he's got 26 million followers on Instagram. I'm not on Instagram,
You're not really.
No, I'm not.
Are you serious?
I am. Yeah, I know you
got
are.
85 followers.
Well, you know, just 25 million or so short, no problem. I think, I mean, you're right, you know, because we have this new phenomenon right now where, I guess, and I'm using air quotes here, you know, apparently nobodies can have the kind of affluence or the kind of reach that, you know, traditional media platforms will not afford them, right? So, you know, what is the litmus test for, you know, being able to have the kind of influence? And apparently it's just...
It's likes and followers, right?
Right.
It's friends or whatever. It's quite strange, right? This is really weird. And 25 million followers is more than, you know, whatever the Star newspaper has, which is like an 85-year-old publication. It's quite uncanny.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much all of Malaysia, really, given our population
exactly,
is at 30 million, yeah. So.
If you take away the illegal immigrants and the... You've probably got about 26 real Malaysians or 28 real Malaysians. Anyway, so in keeping with our, you know, retro flavor tonight, today, Pat Benatar of the 80s, hit me with your best shot, BFM 89.9. Good morning, 6:18 a.m., BFM 89.9. Pat Benatar, hit me with your best shot. Born 1953, in January, she was the very much the flavor of the day in the 80s, but now she's become a bit of a grandma, but just very much in tune with our retro feel this morning.
Oh, certainly, you know, and I think no better way to start the second half of this week, although we are in the start of the work week, you know, with a song like that, you know, something to get the juices flowing, right, and hit me with your best shot.
I'm sure half the Klang Valley isn't back from work yet, right?
No.
Because obviously people would have taken the whole week off, I mean, clearly, right?
Yeah, except for us, though. Now, why didn't we do that, though, Chuang?
Because,
because we got our paychecks to
clear answer.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you would have seen Travis Kalanick's. Travis Kalanick is the CEO and founder of Uber. He's been coming under a lot of flack for his business and management style, I think. A lot of transgressions in the workplace at Uber, from things like principal confrontation to his aggressive style in terms of his management treatises, the way he's talk to his drivers and kind of like con them out of their rightful share of fees as well. So I think according to the newspapers, he's been ousted from the board as well as his position as CEO because a couple of the activist shareholders has basically said, look, Travis, you've become too much of a liability to the company and to the reputation of the business. Please take a back seat and let a professional manager come in. But Uber has also lost a lot of its management staff. I think the CFO is also gone as well, leaving a bit of a vacuum in the top.
Mm-hmm.
The issue we're discussing today, according to the Quartz Media, is why so many CEOs, especially in Silicon Valley, have to act like jerks. Is that something that you have discovered, Ahan?
Well, I mean, I guess if you go back to, like, say, you know, Steve Jobs, for example, right? You know, he was, or even the likes of Bezos, right? You got the likes of Jobs, Bezos, who aren't, you know, exactly famous for being nice people. You know, they were notorious for, say, how they conduct their meetings, you know, how they dealt with underperforming, you know, staff members, you know, and how they demanded efficiency from their entire operations, right? So you have those kind of traits that are especially celebrated in the tech industry. In Silicon Valley, and you know, so basically, you know, Kalanick, you know, not being the exception there. But so the question here is, you know, do business leaders have to be nice? Well, if you read through this article by QZ.com, you know, it says that there is a distinction to be made between, say, being nice versus being respectful, and I think it's something that we have to highlight here. Now, I guess, you know, given what's happened with Travis Kalanick. You know, I guess respect was something that was lacking in the culture, you know, that was harnessed over there at Uber, you know, given the kind of shenanigans that they used to partake in. I believe some media reports even talk about them sanctioning a trip to a an area with, you know, scantily clad women.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Right, right, exactly. So you have those kind of instances going on, and that, you know, really, I mean, that really shouldn't be any place for those kind of events at any company, right?
Look, I mean, Han, we live in an era of political correctness, and everywhere people are walking on eggshells. I think less so in Malaysia and in the Far East, but certainly in London and New York and most of the developed capitals. If you work in an office where obviously there's you know, gender diversity and racial diversity is very much the order of the day, people don't say certain things and people act in a certain way so to be PC, to be politically correct. But apropos this story, now the Quartz is suggesting that CEOs have to be nice today. I say no. CEOs have to deliver shareholder value. And look, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever, I started taking Uber in Malaysia 2 years ago, and it was quite new then. I think Uber's been around only about 4 or 5, maybe 6 years, right? Travis Kalanick has taken Uber from a zero market capitalization company to a $69 billion market valuation in 4.5 years, 5 years, okay? The CEO's remit, bar none, is to deliver shareholder value and to grow the value of the business. Nothing else. If Travis Kalanick takes it in a certain direction because that's the way he, you know, rolls, then, I mean, why should we deny him this accolade? Why are we penalizing Travis Kalanick for his aggression and his management style when he's given people a business which is the unicorn of unicorns and which, when it comes out to the public markets, will give you such a splash that it will be like no other.
But again, it's going back into the idea of growing pains, right? Because, rather the challenges that come when you scale up, because as you do grow, you engage many more stakeholders. So you no longer just run like a little private company out of your dorm room, right? You know, you have to be a lot more responsible given that you are the flag bearer for that particular product or for that particular vertical, right? I mean, if you go back to some of the models that you mentioned earlier, like toe-stepping and principal confrontation. Right? Well, I mean, because when you look
at... You've got to hustle. I mean, that's what you do when you're growing. You got to hustle and get business.
Yeah, but then you got Facebook's model as well that says move fast and break things, right? But do you see Zuckerberg as being this bad boy? Not necessarily, right? So I guess there is a way, there is a distinction to be made between, say, an innovator, you know, somebody like Steve Jobs, Bezos, and, you know, perhaps Kalanick as well, who can really be that innovator and really push boundaries in terms of their product category. But in terms of being an effective leader, obviously Kalanick was found wanting, you know, so, you know, obviously it was not sustainable. And obviously there were severe flaws in the culture that was created at Uber.
Absolutely. I mean, we see some of the FANG stocks, the Amazons, the Facebooks, the Netflixes, the Googles. And now, I mean, I think the smallest of the FANGs has got something like a $400 or $500 billion valuation, which is something like 8 or 9 times where Uber is now. So whether or not Travis Kalanick's the right person or whether or not they hire the right managers to take the place, we don't know. Only time will tell. 6:24 in the morning, 12:51, the next track from The Strokes, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:39 in the morning, 28th of June, Wednesday, Headbangers of the World Unite. That was Any Way You Want It by Journey. Anyone who remembers that song from the 80s will have these visions of these hairspray rockers over their guitars, keeled over, headbanging away. And if you remember that, you'll be as old as I am.
Oh, yeah, and we obviously are follicly challenged, or at least me.
Well, some deliberately, some not deliberately.
Ah, okay, right. So. Well, nevertheless, we do not have the kind of locks that would lend themselves well to any form of headbanging. So,
that's right.
Yeah, that is obviously of a bygone era for
us. We can wear wigs, hon.
How about that? How smart is that?
Okay. I'm Khoo Sit Chong. Of course, I am talking to Tan Chung Han. It is BFM Radio 9.9 Wednesday. Look, let's talk about this article from the World Economic Forum. And I actually find it intriguing that the World Economic Forum is talking about education and how it can't keep up with a fast-moving world. Mm. I agree with the story written by a guy called Andrea Bandelli. He's the executive director of the Science Gallery International. And he's saying that traditional schools, all the way to professional development and lifelong learning institutions like universities, they don't prepare current and future generations for the fourth industrial revolution. And I'm just wondering why, A, the World Economic Forum is talking about this, and B, why that's the case. Because for a long, long time, and I'm going to cite Sir Ken Robinson's TED Talks in 2012. His was the most popular TED Talks, something like 40, 50 million views, about how education is inappropriate and inadequate to deal with the current scenario.
No, and I totally agree. So this article starts off with this question: how do we plan for something we can't predict? When you're faced with market conditions right now, when you've got AI systems creating other AI systems, you know, and completely bypassing the human element, well, maybe not completely, but certainly bypassing a significant chunk of human involvement, you know, where does that leave us, right? Because for so long, you know, humans have found meaning and purpose via what we do, work, right? And so now that this supply chain, being the education education system is being disrupted, you know, given that we do not know how to prepare kids for jobs that may or may not even be there. You know, so like when you consider your conventional academic pursuits, say, you know, like the sciences or math or, sciences or math, right? Like, where do you go from here, right? Because, you know, like, do the principles even apply? Even economics, for example. We have seen over the last few years, you know, how just economic principles have been just thrown out the window. Negative interest rates.
Right? I want to ask you, because traditionally schools anyway haven't really prepared people for the future. I'm going to cite, for example, just two things, right? Financial education and how to manage your own personal P&L. The other thing is interpersonal skills, which also schools don't really prepare you for. But in this day and age, we need things like emotional intelligence, intercultural sensitivity, creativity, problem formulation, economic citizenship, empathy. You're involved in education, Han. You would have seen, you see firsthand how the structures currently are and where they're lacking. Is it because of inertia by the school's principals? Is it because aversion to change? Is it because it costs too much? Is it because we just don't know what the future holds for us?
Now, this is something that I certainly will discuss at length with my colleagues and basically other participants of the local education scene. Essentially, it's this. It is a very convoluted problem because it's not just...
You've got 2 minutes, Han.
Okay. Well...
Convoluted nonetheless.
Yeah, because it's not just, you know, this idea of, you know, that what happens within the schooling system is solely reliant on educators. That notion is misplaced because you have to manage not just the kids as well, but also the parents' expectations as well, and society as well, and the government. So you've got many, many, many stakeholders whom you have to try and balance it out. And it all filters down to this one teacher who has to engage with, you know, be 20 students,
so
if you're lucky, to
like
even 50, right? Yeah. So, and then a couple with just the kind of disruption that we're seeing in any given economy, right? How do you then prepare students for that economy? Now, if you have to use a functionalist approach, in other words, you know, the purpose of the education system is to prepare your students with the skill sets
for the working world.
For the working world in that particular economy. Like, so there's a distinction there, right? So if you're going to subscribe to that notion, then it's going to be really, really hard because when you don't know what that economy will look like in, say, 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, right? So it's... your guess is as good as mine, but what I do know and what I empathize with is with the fellow teachers out there who have to manage so many expectations and try to deliver results that, you know, may be relatively meaningless, you know, in just a few years from now. I think that's a very tough position to be in.
No, you're right. Education is one of the perennial problems and conundrums that face society. Ongoing issue, and I'm sure the boffins will be trying to find a solution to way forward. 6:45 in the morning, we are going to take a break for now and come back with more music. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:49 a.m., 28th of June, Wednesday. I'm Khoo Soo Chong, joined by Tan Chung Han. We've just listened to Help from the Beatles, and they could have been singing, I think Paul McCartney could have been singing about the education system, not just in Malaysia, but the world. I think all over the world, educators are grappling and wringing their hands in despair over what to do with a very uncertain and very volatile future, because in the current system, where you've got this one individual teacher standing in front of a lecture hall full of students, trying to prepare them for a very scary and very unpredictable world out there, how do we do it? You would know a thing or two about this, Han, because you kind of have a foothold in education yourself.
Yeah, no, certainly. And you know, we were referring this article from the World Economic Forum, talking about how, you know, in today's day and age, and also looking ahead to the future needs of any society, you know, the individuals in that society will need a heightened level of emotional intelligence, intercultural sensitivity, creativity, problem formulation, etc., you know, economic citizenship and whatnot. You know, because when you look at these traits, though, you know, and trying to, you know, assume that these kind of traits can only be fostered in a classroom, I think that is a discussion that needs to be broadened, because, you know, we obviously have many emotionally intelligent beings. We have many individuals who are who show empathy, you know, who are adaptable and resilient, who have also gone through the traditional schooling system, right? So, you know, I, you know, dare suggest, you know, for the sake of argument here, that it's not necessarily the system that's at fault, but obviously there are many, many other avenues, and not just the schools, by which we can develop all these traits, you know, emotional intelligence, you know, intercultural sensitivity. And
but that's not enough, though, Han, because when you look at the biggest disruption that's going to happen in the 21st century, it's artificial intelligence. Some of the industries that are going to be disrupted: doctors, lawyers, journalists, manufacturing, office and admin. I mean, if you're involved in a back office job in the corporate world, you're going to be displaced by software, because, I mean, a lot of the functions that accountants, office managers, general managers, admin people, they're going to be disrupted. Installation, maintenance, legal, sports design, sports and media. I mean, people like us, unless, you know, unless we evolve and upskill, we're going to be displaced by computers and robots. And on the uptake, things like computers, mathematics, architecture, engineering, you know, robotics, things like that. So unless you're at the top of the food chain, you're going to be disrupted. I'm not sure how education is going to keep up with all this.
Well, it's not just education. This conundrum is obviously, you know, being faced by, you know, many, many other sectors as well. When we talk about, say, fintech and what they could do for, you know, the banks, what the likes of Uber and Grab will do for the likes of taxi drivers, right? So it's not just in an It's not just a problem that's unique to the education system. You know, I think, you know, again, many, many other sectors of an economy will be facing that same kind of disruption as well. Now, what we're discussing here today also ties in quite nicely with this article in today's Edge Financial Daily, with the headline, Malaysia's Industry 4.0 Initiative, Slow on Uptake. So, you know, it talks about how players are grappling with funding issues, a mindset shift, and also low expertise. And so, again, highlighting this conundrum that not just schools and educators face, but also, you know, architectural, banking, you know, transport and whatnot, different sectors also.
Correct. I mean, the rest of the region is really chugging along with, you know, moving up the value chain, and Malaysia is kind of like just trying to keep up with that particular scenario. And already the rest of the world, talking about the Silicon Valleys and the bungalows of this world, are already at that level. So really, really difficult challenge. And I think individually, families and parents have got to really take the mantle and you know, take the bull by the horns and push through proactive measures. I don't know how we're going to do it, but these are things which are happening in real time, right, with people with children.
Right.
I mean, how do you get involved? If your child is not involved, you know, he's not mathematically inclined or numerically inclined, how do you get the guy to go and do robotics when that could be well the future?
Right, you know, so let's say I'm looking at it from a parent's point of view, right? So the parent is already struggling to, like, you know, make ends meet.
Himself or herself in the corporate world.
Right, exactly. Then trying to think about the future challenges that his or her child might face, and, okay, what's the easiest solution? Farm it off to the schools, right? Then the schools will say,
then
the schools are being held to this criteria, like, you know, say the IGCSEs or the SPMs and whatnot, and or A-levels.
Or
and
the say, IBs, as
right,
well,
IBs.
Yeah.
And like, say, these are the criteria that I'm, you know, being having to, you know, impose on your child. You know, so it's not me. So, you know, the A-stars are being awarded based on these criteria. And guess what? You know, emotional intelligence is not one of the A-stars that they award you for, right? Then what happens? The child then goes through the system, goes to the workplace, deals with managers, you know, who may harp on, say, efficiency and results more so than, you know, playing nice, going back to the story that we talked about, right?
Exactly.
With Uber and Trevor Kalanick. So it's a very, very convoluted system. Many, many factors at play here. I mean, if you have that silver bullet, I mean, just let us know, by all means.
Big issues, festive season. Glad I've got Yuna next. Raya, oh yeah, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Koo Soo Chong and I'm joined this morning by Tan Chung Han. It is Wednesday, the 28th of June, 2017. It is Hump Day. Han, it is the middle of the week. We've come back from a long weekend, 4 days worth of public holiday, 2 days plus weekend, 4 days of off days.
Man,
it's been a fantastic break, but we've come back right in the middle of Raya season. And I'm not sure how many people are back on the highways and byways working.
Yeah, and it could be worse, you know, given that we have bypassed the Monday blues, so to speak. You know, and we are, like you said, you know, going straight into Wednesday, only 3 weeks days before the weekend, you know. But again, I certainly had a very enjoyable 4 day break.
It was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, I hope you had one as well.
I spent the whole entire 4 day period not just eating but sleeping as well. Fantastic, Malaysians' favorite pastimes.
Can't get any better than that.
Yes. That's right. So here at BFM, we do a lot of news stories and you do a lot of news aggregations. And what we've discovered in the last few years has been the migration from news sources, from newspapers, to online sources. And Interestingly, Reuters, citing a CNET study, has said that online portals are becoming a medium of choice for many. And once they've read the news, WhatsApp, the social media platform, which I think is now counts over a billion users, me included, is the sharing platform of choice. We spoke to Matt Armitage of Culture Pop to get a handle of what is going on.
Yeah, I found the whole kind of report very interesting, but I think there were not a couple of errors, but I think they made a few kind of cultural mistakes, maybe. I think Malaysians especially use Facebook in a very different way. When you look at people in the UK and Europe, they tend to have a much smaller group of friends on Facebook, whereas Malaysians have this kind of enormous group. You know, everyone you meet, you almost instantly add as a Facebook friend. So I think Facebook is a much more impersonal thing for a lot of Malaysians. So they tend to do the kind of more personal chat on things like on WhatsApp, where they can have private groups, they can have these kind of closed conversations. So I think that's one of the reasons that we're seeing that more, just because as a trend, Malaysians tend to use WhatsApp for these more kind of personal communications than they use Facebook for, whereas in other countries, their Facebook is already their kind of WhatsApp group.
Yeah, good on Matt for pointing that out, because I didn't realize that actually happens, and that dichotomy between us and the Europeans. I wonder whether that's got anything to do with our cultural backgrounds, because maybe in the public, overt, external world, we're expected to be culturally sensitive and quite quiet and quite, you know, quite introverted in a way. I mean, I've been to press conferences where, you know, reporters don't even ask questions, and I think it's a cultural thing, especially if you come from a very Asian, Chinese, you know, very Malay or Indian background. But on Facebook or on social media, you're allowed to express your views, and sometimes under the guise of anonymity.
Well, you know, yeah, sometimes, and that's where people create those fake accounts, you know, with fake
pictures. With your avatars and what have you.
And you have them on Twitter as well. You know, and it's interesting that you drew upon that analogy of, well, the actually real-life experiences of what we see on the local press conference circuit, right? You often have the press conference after the press conference, right? After the press conference is over.
That's right.
Yeah, then
that's
they hound the newspaper, the newsmaker or the main speaker for the day, and then you ask the questions in a more private setting. But I also find it interesting, you know, what Matt said, you know, given that Malaysians tend to have, at least according to his estimation, tend to have a wider circle of Facebook friends.
Is that true? I mean, Malaysians love Facebook. We've got something like 12 or 13 million Facebook accounts. I'm sure some people have multiple accounts. Your private and your public as well.
Yeah, no, perhaps. I think it goes back to this sense of community, for example. Because, you know, for example, we have just been raised, you know, thinking that everyone who's older than us is uncle, auntie. So you have the kind of...
Who are you calling uncle, Sharad?
Who are you calling Sharad?
Who are you talking about? Why are you talking about Sharad, man?
Yeah. No, but so I guess with that kind of level of familiarity, even with strangers, you know, you are not opposed to just adding them on Facebook, right? I mean, because it's, after all, it's just a digital manifestation of your identity and not, you know, really who you are. Or is it really who you are?
Well, it is. And I think I just want to go back to WhatsApp. And, you know, WhatsApp has become a real source for news. But the unfortunate thing is it is actually shared by people within your groups. And I'm not sure, because of this rise of fake news, don't know how recent or how new or how real those news are. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, last week I drive a hybrid car, and, you know, a few days ago got a video of this hybrid vehicle, ostensibly a hybrid vehicle, exploding into flames in Singapore near an MRT station. And I was actually quite concerned because, you know, obviously with batteries and it gets to a very high temperature. So I did some searches because I have a Toyota hybrid, and there were no news results for hybrids catching fire. But it made me think that increasingly a larger swath of our population are turning towards these social media platforms or news sources, rightly or wrongly. And I don't know whether there's any initiatives to collar and to manage this news flow. I don't think the news media platforms have... Well, you know...
Because, yeah, careful now, Troy.
You know, but you're right, because in the old world, newspapers had sub-editors, editors, you know, there were copy editors, and you had a couple of, you know, authorities and overseers to make sure that your news was correct and factually accurate. Today, no such thing.
Right, and no, I guess given or judging by the WhatsApp messages that I receive, and I would like to think that it comes from good intentions, or they're trying to look out for you, but very often, you know, some of these viral WhatsApp messages are just plain false. You know, very often I had to tell some of my older relatives to point out that, hey, this WhatsApp that you just sent me is something something that's been circulating.
Yeah,
you know, making its rounds from like a few years ago.
Correct.
It's making its rounds again. Check this website. You know, the EPF, you know, so often when you go to their website, you will see press statements from the EPF disputing many of these viral WhatsApp messages.
I mean, look
that
at the one
false.
Recently about the Volvo, right? I saw that Volvo, you know, the apparently the one of the semi-autonomous models produced by Volvo got a video sent that the vehicle actually, you know, started on its own and then ran over one of the Volvo managers, and then it prompted a statement from Volvo itself saying that, you know, it wasn't due to this, it was due to that, and they had to go and explain and cover the tracks. And very similar again. I mean, according to my WhatsApp groups, yesterday or the day before yesterday, got a video of the AirAsia flight that that I think lost one of its engines on the left, had to land back at Perth after, you know, traversing 150 miles or something, 1.5 hours into the Indian Ocean, having to make a U-turn back. And, you know, what was actually, you know, could have been quite a routine issue, or not a routine issue, became a huge issue on social media, prompting even that Dato' Zaid Ibrahim, the former minister in the PM's department, to actually make a... So, you know, these things happen all the time, and they're becoming more and more forceful in nature.
Yeah, no, certainly. And then when you consider how, like, say, the hoax of Vitalik Buterin's death, he is the founder of the cryptocurrency.
Is that right? There was a thing on that?
Yeah, yeah. So Ethereum, and Ethereum's prices just plunged, like wiping up about $4 billion in its market value. So very often, some of these hoaxes or these fake news have got no real world implications, you know. And you know, hopefully, if you were holding on to some Ethereum, you had the stomach to, you know, weather that sharp, drastic fall before seeing it recover. I don't know how much it's recovered since then, but yeah. Nevertheless, you know, again, I like to think that many of these people have some good intentions when they send these WhatsApps, you know, to perhaps, you know, safeguard us from potential pitfalls that they believe others have suffered. But, you know, again, having that self, you know, having that ability to self-regulate, though, you know, edit what you see, and you can just as easily double-check the contents of those viral messages that you see just by doing a quick Google search, right?
Yeah, but it's quite, yeah, exactly. But if you don't have the wherewithal or you don't have the access to the internet, you kind of like take those fake news as real.
Well, I mean, if you're getting it via WhatsApp, then you got the data, so then just Google that.
Yeah, correct. I'm just going back to the Ethereum issue. Now they're trading at $289, and in January they're just $8 per ether. So it's really crazy, but it's getting increasing validation in the real world. I think Tokyo and Japan have actually endorsed a cryptocurrency. So another thing we've got to watch out in the news. Han, I mean, do you look at the cryptocurrencies at all? Bitcoins, Ethereums, that kind of thing?
I only look at it when they actually do have those sharp drops, though. And again, I'm a bit of a skeptic. I guess I'm just trying to placate my doubts, given, you know, I'm kind of beating myself up, given that I did not go in early enough.
Bitcoin,
yeah,
really?
I mean, so I'm like, I'm trying to justify myself. Yeah, you see, that's why I didn't go in. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, 7:15 in the morning. We're going to come back with more news analysis, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.